Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. More than 57 million people suffer from mental illness, and for many, navigating the mental health system can prove challenging at best and often incredibly frustrating and fruitless. Many fall through the cracks, ending up hopeless, homeless, or dead, raising the question about the current state of mental health policy. Is it working, and is it working for whom? What role can the government play to help those suffering from mental illness, and what is being done to ensure that those people get the help they need? Joining me for the second part of our series, Living with Mental Illness, are Dr. Mark Salzar and Carol Mihalik. Salzar is associate professor in the psychiatry department at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the director of the University of Pennsylvania's Collaborative on Community Integration of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
And when we get a little further into the show, we're going to take a look at that title I just read. Carol Mihalik is the mother of an adult son with bipolar disorder. She's also a board member of the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Bucks County, and she helps train police officers learn how to assist those with mental illness. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Mark, let's start with you. I watched the Fred Friendly seminar that was recently on WHYY TV. It's called Minds on the Edge. One of the experts on the panel was asked about the mental health system, and he said, there is no system. He said, there are a bunch of disparate parts doing different things, all of whom need more funding, more cooperation, and more training. Do you agree?
Unfortunately, I do agree that at this point in time, that is the case. It is a fragmented system. People aren't working as well together as they could. But the good news is that there are initiatives. People are aware of this, have been aware of it actually for decades now. I was involved actually in some work in the children's area where they were talking about systems of care and trying to help get services become more organized and less fragmented and get them to work together. And there are definitely some initiatives in the adult system as well to get people to work together better.
All right. I want to take the position, and I want to take this position throughout the show, of a parent or a sibling of a child with mental illness. And I hear words like collaborative and integration, and my mind goes into a fog. Well, it goes into a fog a lot. But so make it concrete for me. But what does that mean for my child?
So where we're at right now in terms of national policy and local policy is that there have been a lot of initiatives. I actually think there's been somewhat of a revolution in terms of how people are thinking about providing supports to adults with psychiatric disabilities and the types of supports that are being made available. The revolution kind of started in 1990 with the Americans with Disabilities Act that talked about ensuring that people with disabilities, all disabilities, have opportunities to live in the community like everyone else. And this act, this law, was brought into adults with psychiatric disabilities in 1999 with the Supreme Court Olmstead decision, where they found that unnecessary institutionalization, basically segregation of adults with psychiatric disabilities in state and county hospitals, if they could live in the community, they should live in the community with the proper supports being made available. And that's caused a change in how systems, sort of national, state, and local, are thinking about services, how they're organized, how they're working, what kinds of new supports need to be offered.
Well, one of the things we heard last week on the show was that some of these laws inadvertently wind up putting people on the streets. I mean, you talk about putting people in communities, and you and I both know, all of us know, that communities don't welcome psychiatric patients with open arms, number one. And number two, in this economy, you know, where's the money for this?
Yep. First of all, stigma and discrimination is a major issue that prevents housing, new housing, to be developed for people who are homeless. Actually, the good news here in Philadelphia, one of the problems nationally that happened with homelessness in particular and deinstitutionalization is people were being discharged from state and county hospitals, and there weren't appropriate community-based services available to them. And that's one explanation for why a number of people ended up homeless on the streets. The good news here in Philadelphia is that when the when Byberry closed a number of years ago now,
Philadelphia... There was a state mental hospital in northeast Philadelphia that had become a warehouse for thousands of people with mental illness.
Yep, absolutely. And there are plenty of warehouses still out there. But Philadelphia was able to capture the money. What happened historically in systems when they close hospitals is the state would take the money and use it for something else. And Philadelphia County, at least, reinvested that money into community-based services to try to address homelessness, try to decrease homelessness. You know, what I won't say, Dan, is I won't say that things are perfect now, and I'm certainly there are a lot of problems in the system, but there is a lot of room for optimism, and I think we're not quite at a tipping point, and we need people to be paying attention to what the opportunities are for changing the system, and there are opportunities now, and providers and policymakers are thinking about things in a new way. And programs like NAMI, advocacy organizations, can really play a big role in making the change really happen.
So I want to come back to being a parent. So what has changed for me, for my family, my life over the last, decade? Is that a fair number to throw out?
Yeah. What's changed in the last decade is, and really the last couple of years, here in Philadelphia County, there are a number of new initiatives. I was actually involved in getting funding for a new program at Horizon House. You talked to a gentleman last week who utilized Horizon House services, a program called Education Plus.
What is it? What's it do?
Education Plus provides supports for college students with serious mental illnesses, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and major depression. So these are students who historically haven't had a lot of resources on college campuses. And this is a program where they get paired one-on-one with a supporter who helps them navigate, negotiate the college system, stays in touch with them over time in case they're starting to experience problems associated with their illness, encourages them to get the services they need, the supports they need.
How many slots do they have?
I estimate that they have around 60, 70 slots, and they're, for the most part, full. There are a number of students. It's actually the largest supported education program in the country, we believe, here in Philadelphia. So that is a resource. Unfortunately, not a lot of providers know about it. Not a lot of parents know about it. Not a lot of students know about it.
And even if they did, they're full.
That is correct. I mean, we could definitely use more more slots, more support.
Why aren't you getting it?
I think, you know, Philadelphia County actually supports it, and Pew Foundation provides financial support. I think we need to continue to make the case for why it's important that these are effective services. Students are graduating. I go to a graduation ceremony every year with students who come up there and say, I would not have been able to make this. I wouldn't have been able to graduate from community college or Temple or LaSalle unless I had this program.
I really appreciate your optimism, and I'm going to be calling you quite often when I get depressed about the lack of resources. out there for to be my personal therapist. But it seems that a lot of the difficulties, I venture to say all of the difficulties with treating those with severe mental illness, is the underpinnings of stigma, is about ignorance and fear. And the research I've read, that even with these tremendous breakthroughs about learning that it's a brain disorder, it's got nothing to do with character, even that research has had little impact on stigma. And, you know, we're going to be talking about it later with Carol also, but what's your take on that? What can be done?
Well, first of all, there has been some research suggesting that focusing on mental illness as a brain disorder actually might enhance stigma, because people see this as permanent and unchangeable. And I believe that these are there's biochemistry involved in mental illnesses. I try not to emphasize it. What I spend a lot of time talking about is the hope. There is has been a belief among our colleagues, I'm a clinical psychologist as well, psychiatrists, social workers, that having a serious mental illness is a death sentence. That basically you'll never be able to work, you'll never be able to go to school, you shouldn't date, you shouldn't be a parent, you shouldn't vote even, you should stay at home, take your medication, and not experience any stress in your life. And where we're at right now, from a policy perspective, from a theory perspective, from a research perspective, is we have evidence, we have policy, we have theory saying that that's not the way to go about doing things. But our professional colleagues don't always, they're not on board with that. And actually, there also is research suggesting that mental health providers have more stigmatizing, more negative beliefs, attitudes about people they serve, they treat, than the general population. And that's something we need to do something about.
Well, so sounds like you and I need to set up a conference, maybe invite Carol and the folks at NAMI and our colleagues. We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to come back and talk with Carol about her personal experience and now her professional experience, speaking of good news. As you who are listening probably know, that this is our pledge break, and this is our time to take a minute off and ask you to show your support for this kind of programming, for this station. I'm going to hand you over to Pledge Central and hand you over to Mike and Scott. I think Susan Palenko is over there, my dear friends and colleagues. Mike and Susan, hi.
Hi, we're here. Thank you so much, Dan. And, you know, you just said we should set up a conference. Well, as you know, we just had a big conference here at WHYY. We started a conversation on the issues around mental health and mental illness in America. Back in June, we had a huge group of people come. The head of the Department of Public Welfare of Pennsylvania was here, Dr. Arthur Evans from the city of Philadelphia. A lot of very important people and citizens, stakeholders, mental health professionals all came here and started a discussion about what needs to be done. That's what WHYY does. We don't just talk about an issue. We actually connect people with resources. We connect people with each other, with experts, and we start a conversation. Right now, we're hoping that you will start a telephone conversation with the great folks from the Child Guidance Resource Center. They are answering the phones at 1-888-345-9499. Start a conversation with them about the benefits of membership.
And you can become a member by giving us a call. 1-888-345-9499. As Mike mentioned, we have wonderful volunteers here waiting to take your call and get in on the conversation. But if you're like me and you listen to Voices on a regular basis, you've already made that choice. Since you're listening, the next step is to participate and become a member. 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. Dan is a singular voice here in the Delaware Valley, and I believe that he is, you know, right up there with being a national treasure. So since you're listening, please show your support for Voices. Since you've already made that choice, the next thing to do is become a member. Go to whyy.org.
Or give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. the kind of topics we address on Voices in the Family and the very special way in which Dan addresses these issues, you just can't find that anywhere else. And Susan and I were just chatting for a second. You know, Susan, you became a member 10 years ago when you moved to this area. The first voice you heard on your radio was Dr. Dan. How sweet is that?
It's true.
And right around that time, you picked up the phone and became a member of WHYY because you knew that you couldn't find that kind of program anywhere else, and you had to support it. 1-888-345-9499. That's our number. Or WHYY.org. This is a very short break, and we're going to go back to Voices in the Family.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. Headquartered in Philadelphia, Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to the health and well-being of nearly 3 million people throughout the Delaware Valley. Independence Blue Cross now offers individual health insurance plans, including preventative care, emergency care, and prescription drug coverage. Further details available online at ibx4u.com. Independence Blue Cross, here for you every step of the way.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. To those of you who called in, thank you so much. We are all grateful to you and hope you continue to call in while we're during the show. This is the second of our two-part series on living with mental illness. I'm joined by Dr. Mark Salzer and Carol Mahalik. We spoke with Mark earlier. He's an associate professor in psychiatry department at Penn, and he also runs Penn's Collaborative on Community Integration of Individuals with Psychiatric Disability. Carol's the mother of an adult son with bipolar disorder. She's also a board member on the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Bucks County. She helps train police officers on how to assist those with mental illness, and we're going to be hearing more about that. Carol, let's talk with you a bit. Tell me a little bit about your son, his background with mental illness.
Well, first of all, I guess I wanted to say about the diagnosis of bipolar. Christopher is my son, 24 years old, love of our life. And my husband and I only have Christopher as our one child. We've taken Christopher to numerous recognized physicians. And the reason I'm concentrating on this is because, again, it's a label, it's a letter, it's a stigma. At this point right now, his diagnosis is depression and anxiety, which is very important to understand the diagnosis. But again, it's always that stigma. He, you know, the having that label on you, I think, is very disabling.
And of course, some labels are worse than others. Bipolar is worse than depression.
Well, bipolar was a very big problem with our son because he was given the wrong medication that added to some of his symptoms, his aggression, anxiety, and things like that. So now we're more on an even keel now that he has the, maybe, hopefully at this point, proper diagnosis of depression.
So you went to a lot of physicians.
A lot.
And you're probably not alone here.
No.
Lots of people go to lots of physicians and get lots of different labels.
Yes.
So what kind of treatment is he getting now?
He's in the supportive community, the assertive community treatment program in Bucks County, the PAC program. He gets his psychiatrist, his therapist, vocational specialist, all come to him in his home.
Really?
Yes.
How does one find such a program?
I found it because I am so affiliated with NAMI. NAMI and my A-list friends, they've told me, they've taught me, they've...
So what's a PAC program?
PAC program, I guess it's a community, assertive community treatment program where the services come to the individual rather than the individual going to a base service unit.
All right. You see the skeptical look on my
face. Yes, I do. And the reason I'm saying, I'm emphasizing on coming to him is my son has anosognosia, the lack of insight, the unawareness of his illness, which I think if they
Which is not unusual for mental illness. Not an unusual
Okay.
Yeah. Go on.
And for our son, if he did not have those supportive community services coming to him, I wonder where he would be if we're not here.
So let me come back to my skeptical look, which has never left my face since you started talking about this wonderful program.
Yeah.
Is, I don't know if I should ask you or Mark, is that program available to everyone in the Delaware Valley who has a mental illness? Mark.
Right. There are assertive community treatment and other types of case management programs that are available in the Delaware Valley area.
How does one find them?
You know, I would recommend that anybody, that people, family members, individuals themselves, contact their local offices of mental health and talk to somebody there and find out what kinds of programs are available. Even community mental health centers don't always know what's available in the whole system. So I hope as a result of this that people inundate the local offices of mental health. I've got a lot of friends in them, and hopefully they won't mind, and they'll get a lot of calls.
Well, if they do mind, they've got your email address.
That's so correct. That's correct. But I'd also say that, you know, you asked if it's available to everybody. These are expensive. This, first of all, act as an evidence-based practice. One of the evidence-based practices that the Center for Mental Health Services has identified, a federal agency, they're also expensive services, and they are not available to everyone with a serious mental illness.
Why?
Because they are incredibly expensive. They usually are reserved for individuals who have been recently and frequently hospitalized. So it's expensive. It's wear and tear on the system to be hospitalized and wear and tear on the person. So they've reserved these services. But there are other, you know, there are other supports that are available. Not enough, and there need to be more resources, but there are other things that the local county offices can tell people about.
Carol, I want to get to what I know is near and dear to your heart. Your son attempted suicide.
Several times.
And you called the police.
Yes.
What happened when you called the police?
I soon realized that that whole situation did not turn out the way that I had wanted it to. I called the police for help, and I got hurt. 2 days later, Christopher tried to commit suicide because he said that he didn't want us to put us through all that. That was his word to us. So I quickly evaluated when we all got back on our feet again that, you know, mental illness is a very complicated situation here. And I soon realized that the police did not have enough tools on their tool belt that they could handle the situation. So part of my advocacy from NAMI...
That says something about you.
Well, thank you.
Because I know a lot of parents in your position who have been angry at the police and blamed them.
I wouldn't say I wasn't angry. But you know, you get through that and you get to the core of the problem. And through my efforts with NAMI that I saw that they had such a broad base of information. And so our advocacy efforts with the two other of my colleagues, Agnes McFarlane and Charles Bechtel from the NAMI board, we started out thinking that, okay, maybe there must be a better way. And we came upon this, the Memphis model that was created by Sam Cochran and Randy DuPont out of a situation where a police officer shot a man who had mental illness.
So what do they do? What do you do?
So we have, and we're very lucky, I have to say, I think in a positive mood from a county perspective, we've had our county officials, collaborative effort. We have our county on board. We have our base service unit on board, pumping up services for our crisis services. We have our family members, we have...
What's it look like?
Well, the training, we come and we train. We've just had our first graduation of 21 officers from the four major police office departments in Bucks County. We started with Ben Salem, Northampton, Bristol Borough, and Bristol Township.
Now, who were all these other people that were involved? You're training police.
We're training police because they're professionals in mental health, trying to deliver services to try to let our officers learn more of how to prevent illnesses, how to prevent injuries, mostly to the officer and the person that's involved in this interaction with the police.
So I would imagine all of those other systems that you mentioned, they're involved in what? Training? They're involved in making programs happen after training? Tell me.
Well, the program is 40 hours of specialized training in mental health issues for the police. That's the gist of it. We just had the first training in September. The other parts of it, we have sections from NAMI has a family section. They'll bring in people that a family member and relates their stories to the police and maybe how it happened and how could it have better happened, better outcome. We have veterans. We have our Veterans Association come and bring veterans to tell them about their stories. We have our drug and alcohol. We have Crisis Center that we just put a load of money in from our county.
Is this part of crisis intervention?
Yes, absolutely. It's a collaborative county effort, community effort.
So now what happens when these 21 police go back to work? What's different now?
Well, what's really big difference now is that they're capable of handling a person with a mental health issue. Before, they didn't know what to do.
So what do they do now?
They'll come out, they'll take the time. Everything slows down with CIT. You slow the situation down. You evaluate it. Are they drinking or do they have some other underlining situation? There's always more sides to the story than one. So it gives them, the officer, more time, more resources. They know where to take them. They know that they can go to a resource center, a crisis center, rather than taking them to an ER that maybe has, you know, there are several emergencies.
You mean an average cop on the street doesn't know what's available?
I dare say no.
Mark?
I was going to say the average provider on the street doesn't know
everything that's
available, too.
Well, that's
true.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I mean, I don't. I mean, that's why I'm pressing you guys so hard.
Our police now are our first-line mental health professionals. You know, and
right,
our jails
right.
are becoming our major mental right. health hospitals. So the police are very anxious and very eager to learn as much as they can
to intervene. I've no doubt. Let's go to the phones. We've got Jeanette who wants to join the conversation. Jeanette, hi. You're on Voices.
Hi, Dr. Gottlieb and Carol. This is Jeanette, and I want to say first I very much support the CIT effort in our county and commend everyone involved in that advocacy effort. I wanted to make two statements. Number one, you brought up the ACT program, and that is one of the programs that we did bring to Bucks County through advocacy, again, through NAMI, advocacy effort. And the ACT program is available in 43 ACT programs or CTT programs available in our state. So I do encourage people to call their mental health office of mental health to find out where these programs are located.
These are government office. When you say office of mental health, Mark mentioned that these are government, county, city government offices. Go on.
And to see if the program's in your county, and if it's not, become an advocate for the program. And the Office of Mental Health in Harrisburg, the OMSA's office, is very much encouraging and supporting the idea of seeing ACT programs in our state. And they have hired a national trainer and a state trainer to ensure fidelity to the models that these programs are utilized in the way that the model requires. So that's a very good news to see that our Office of Mental Health is now supportive of these very intensive programs that support people with severe mental illnesses. And the other issue I just wanted to mention was that for all the programs that we have in our state, and Pennsylvania actually is the second highest funded for mental health in our country, but even with all the programs that are available, including ACT, because of our current law, the Mental Health Procedures Act of 1976, individuals who have a lack of insight, which is known as anosognosia, which Carol did mention, are not able to access any of the services because they are voluntary. And with someone who has lack of insight, until they are able to be court-ordered into treatment, if they aren't able to voluntarily request it
well,
on their own.
Yeah, we touched on this complication last week. I'd like to pursue that a little bit further because both Carol and Mark are shaking their heads. Jeanette, thanks so much for your call. Mark, you not only shook your head, you made a face. So you first.
Yeah, I did make a face. I mean, I made a face because I think I would like us to take a first effort at making our mental health systems and services more hopeful, recovery and community integration oriented, more positive, and welcoming of individuals with serious mental illnesses, that we want to develop collaborations between providers and individuals who are experiencing mental health issues, make that the first order of change. And then after we take those efforts, then maybe we'll have to look at involuntary services. I'm not a big advocate of that. I think it they don't promote self-determination, dignity, personal respect. And I'm a parent. I'm not a parent with a child with a mental illness. But, I mean, I still believe in systems that promote dignity and respect and personal responsibility. And I know that that's impaired when somebody's in an acute crisis. But I think we can address that by making the services more welcoming, more hopeful, really making some major changes in what we have now.
Carol?
I see that the AOT goes hand in hand.
What's AOT?
Assisted outpatient treatment. And I think that there must be some little confusion with that acronym, because I thought that it was an assisted outpatient treatment and not forced into, only from the standpoint where, like, say, as an example, my son, when he is in acute crisis, he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to do it. So if I just left him spiral downward, that's my greatest. I mean, I have walked through the shadow of death on a number of occasions with him.
So what happened? What are your options now when he spirals downward?
Well, I mean, I'm very little. I think my options are very little.
So how do you respond, Mark?
I, first of all, have a lot of respect for Carol and other parents out there who are having to struggle with these situations. And I've been, I've observed, I've seen them, I've heard, I've talked to people, their sons and daughters who are in crisis. And I know it's very hard. I respond by saying, I'd like to see the first order of business taking advantage of these opportunities that we have to really revolutionize the system we have now and make sure that there are hopeful, recovery-oriented programs and services that Carol's son and other people's sons and daughters know about, that other providers know about and utilize, and make sure that they know that there is hope.
Carol, NAMI has been a lifesaver for you.
Absolutely.
And more than just informing you of services, you started working with them, and I would imagine you felt less alone, kindred spirit. I mean, when people have mental illness, they feel isolated from the culture, and so do their parents.
Yeah. I mean, my husband and I feel like we were very alone, and we also stepped back from some of our relationships with friends because even though they understood, they really didn't walk in our shoes. We're the NAMI, our NAMI friends, or A-list friends, as I call it. They all laugh at me. They actually knew what I was talking about. I didn't have to sit there and just, I mean, I could cry if I wanted to, and they understood. They cried with me because they just wanted that awful disease to go away. They wanted all that suffering, all that struggle, which I know is not politically correct now today to say, but that's exactly how I feel, my husband feels. We struggle. My son suffers from the mental illness. And our dreams were shattered. And like Mark says, I do believe that people do have to have a certain type of autonomy. But you have to help them through it. And I think, not to digress on the AOT, but I think that is just a small portion of a bigger problem. I think we need to do lots of different things and keep 10 irons in that fire. So if one gets stronger, then the other will piggyback on that one. And that's just like we did with CIT.
Well,
I know in my community, excuse me, if I call, I'm very hopeful that now I'll get a CIT officer if I can ask.
One of the things I am learning is that the problems are enormous. The resources are not enough. The people combating the problems are not enough. But I have learned that people dealing with the problems are tenacious, are passionate, are stubborn, and they're not going to let go until they make change. We're going to come back in just a couple of minutes and talk more about these issues. We'll be speaking with you, and we'll be speaking with our listeners And if you want to join the conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. As you know, this is our pledge break. I'm going to pass you over to Pledge Central, where you're going to hear another number, and a very important one. It's the one I would like you to call to show your support for Voices in the Family, for public radio, for WHYY. Mike and Scott and Susan Palenko, thank you for picking up the ball here and carrying it forwards.
Thank you, Dan. That number is 1-888-345-9499. Give us a call now. Voices in the Family, as the name suggests, is a show, Susan, that gives people a voice. We just heard this very important story that Carol was telling about her experience, her family, her son's struggle, and what she did. And not only did the show give Carol a voice, but also there are people out there who are listening, who may be going through the same thing, who now think, wow, I'm not alone, there's somebody else, there are resources. So what this show really does is it connects people with each other. And that's what we do here at WHYY, and you can make it happen by becoming a member. Our number is 1-888-345-9499. Give us a call because you make it possible.
You do make it possible, and you can also make a difference by picking up the phone. Give us a call at 1-888-345-9499. We have a group of wonderful volunteers here from the Child Guidance Resource Center here to take your calls. And the exciting thing is to think about a program like Voices in the Family to show your support for this kind of program. We do have a mini goal this hour of 40 members. That could be new members, renewing members. You can give the gift of membership. Perhaps you listen to Voices every week. In my mind, that's a great reason to become a member. 1-888-345-9499. Help us hack away at this mini goal, and we need to hear from you and 32 others so you can make the difference. You can make it happen.
And WHYY's programming cuts across platforms as well. That's something I really want to mention. This two-part series on mental illness, which this is the second part today on Voices in the Family, there was also a TV program that we aired on Channel 12 called Minds on the Edge. It was part of the Fred Friendly seminar, addressed a lot of these same issues. And then we also had two events here at the station that connected people. The story that Carol was telling was very reminiscent. There were so many parents here. But they were connected in their communities. They came together. They had goals. And that evening, everybody just sat down and said, what can we do and how do we make it happen? So WHYY's programming really connects people with each other, cuts across platforms, and starts a conversation. You make it happen when you call 1-888-345-9499 or when you go online to whyy.org. Think about all the things that Dan has raised, all the issues, all the insights he has given you over the years, and then make that call.
And you can make a difference, and you can do that by going to whyy.org, or you can pick up the phone. We have lots of wonderful volunteers here, 1-888-345-9499. Either way, no matter how you come in, we invite you to contribute toward this mini goal this hour of 40 members, whether you're a renewing member or a new member. If you're a new listener of Voices in the Family and you just discovered it and you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, this is such a great program. I mean, you really could hear the emotion in Carol's voice as she told that story. And those are the kinds of touching moments that you do get in Voices. But then there's an action plan, and there's suggestions and resources and connections, and that's what makes the difference. I'm asking you to make a difference yourself. 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. To those of you who have called in, thank you. Thank you so much. This is the second of our two-part series on living with mental illness. We're talking about procedures, policies, what resources are out there. I'm joined by Dr. Mark Salzer and Carol Maholik. Salzer's an associate professor at Penn. He also runs their collaborative on community integration of individuals with psychiatric disabilities. Maholik's a mother of an adult son with mental illness, but she's also a board member of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, the Bucks County chapter, who has many, many resources available. I told both of you during break that our phone lines are lit up, and I want to get right to the phones. Let's start with Anne. Anne, hi, you're on Voices.
I've had two members of my family with mental illness, and I have a question about sometimes people say to me, why don't you have them arrested? When they go to jail, they'll be treated. And I was wondering, is that a fallacy, or does that work out well?
Probably yes to both. Let's turn to our experts. Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hear plenty of stories where family members feel like that is the last resort in order to get services. And I think Pete Early last week talked about that as an option that somebody suggested calling to get somebody arrested. I don't think it's highly recommended. You know, jail is a tough place for anybody. And while a lot of folks in jail, a lot of providers in jail are really trying to do the best they can, you know, it's hard to get great services in jail, and it's a tough thing to do. So I think the key is to really contact your Office of Mental Health and try to do everything you can to see what services are out there, see what your sons or daughters want, and see what's available in the system. Carol?
Yes, with the CIT involvement, we work very closely with the Director of Corrections in Bucks County, and he also agrees that it's a jail. It's not a mental health hospital, but they're becoming our mental health facilities. It's always better to get them into treatment if there's an issue rather than in the jail. They get minimal care. They do the best they can. But again, it's not the place that they need to get treatment.
And like we talked about before the break, getting them into treatment is complicated if they don't have insight and if they're not voluntary.
Right.
That's complicated.
Yes.
Yeah, and what I'd like to do, though, is and there are programs, there are services in counties that are realizing that they need to create services and programs that people want as well, that actually draws
right.
people in. I'm concerned that a lot that's currently available isn't what people want, and they do avoid us. But there are great new initiatives that are available and that could be more available.
We know, for example, that people with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia are more than a brain disorder. They struggle with employment. They struggle with being understood. They struggle with feeling isolated. And if programs can address those issues, then the brain disorder might be easier to treat. That it's, you know, they're whole people, and people need treatment.
Well, the top three things that people with mental illnesses say they want in their lives are a job, a good place to live, and a date on the weekend, you know,
yeah.
intimacy. And those are the same three things that anybody else wants in their lives. And if we oriented services around people rather than focusing on the illness, we might have a little more success. And again, I think that there are opportunities. There are some systems that are trying to get there, but we have a lot further to go, but we need to keep moving it forward in that direction.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Lily on the line. Lily,
hi. I hardly know where to begin. This is such a wonderful program, but I hear you talking about a mentally ill person as capable of making decisions. And in my case, my 45-year-old stepdaughter has been mentally ill almost all of her life. She's been institutionalized many times. She has PACT. PACT brings her medications. She then either sells them for drugs or for alcohol. She's living with a drug dealer. But PACT is not the answer for someone who is so unable to make her own decisions.
Okay. Well, I am happy you called, and I'm happy I'm not in the studio by
but
myself.
What do you do to keep her in an institution?
Well,
was hit by a car. I mean, she can't take care of herself.
She has
no support.
Well, let's find out what the... Well, no, let's not find out what the answers are, because I don't want to be theoretical.
I don't think there is an answer.
Well, I want to find out what the options are. Maybe there are, maybe they're not. Let's listen to what Carol and Mark have to say, and I'm going to ask you to take the answer off the air. Carol?
I would say, first of all and foremost, you have to take care of yourself before you take care of others. And I cannot speak highly enough of NAMI, our Bucks County chapter. We have a helpline. If the woman wants to call the helpline, it's 1-866-399-NAMI, N-A-M-I. And we have a fantastic website, namibucks.org. They can go on there. They can call. We have support meetings the first and third Mondays of every month. We have a 12-week free comprehensive course called Our Family to Family. It's a hallmark course of NAMI. It's family education to learn what those brain disorders are all about and to try to give you some strategies and try to help you help yourself so you can help your loved one. We have peer services, general meetings. I would say NAMI would be my first line.
Lily, thank you so much for your call. And Carol, thank you so much for that answer. I think it was right on target. I want to take a slightly different direction and turn to you, Mark. You may have heard that there's a healthcare problem in this country and that some people are trying to do something about it. Where does mental health fit in all these different bills that are coming out of committees now?
Right. I mean, mental health is one of the services that will be available if we expand Medicaid and Medicare to individuals who don't currently have health care.
That's in the legislation now.
Well, that's what we're talking about, expanding it even more to more people who have access to mental health services. And that increases access to mental health services that are available to people. So that's, you know, that's what's going on right now nationally. Here locally in Pennsylvania, there actually are initiatives. We talked about employment as being a major issue that people with serious mental illnesses experience, especially unemployment. 85% unemployment rate is the general number that we have right now. You know, one of the disincentives for going back to work is losing access to Medicaid, Medicare services. And there actually is a policy in Pennsylvania where if you go back to work, you actually can maintain your health care coverage, some portion of health care coverage for a certain number of years after you go back to work. People don't know that's one of the options here.
Medicare and Medicaid, I'm assuming, provide better services for mental health than private insurance, by and large?
For serious mental illnesses, that seems to be the case, that there are more options, more services available.
Carol, tell me about the future, your vision of the future for your son, for all of those out there.
We had this big discussion yesterday, my husband and I, and our greatest concern is what will happen to our son when we're not here.
Right.
That I would hope that our through age, the lady said that her stepdaughter was 45 and still has that lack of insight and unawareness of her illness. I worry about that for my son. He definitely has the anosognosia. I hope that more services will be provided. I hope just through general education, people just accepting it more and not making it such a stigma. Just like we had other mental physical illnesses that we didn't want to talk about, like cancer and things like that. Now, it's moved a great strides forward. So I think the more we open discussions, some are pretty tenacious, but I think discussion is the key. Opening up, talking about it, destigmatizing it.
Well, and I want to put in a pitch for or against media, because the only time often we hear about mental illness issues is when someone, you know, grabbed a gun or broke the law or did something horrific to somebody else. And that just stokes up the fear. Even if we get somebody to comment on mental illness who's from NAMI or a responsible mental health professional like you, Mark, it still doesn't undo the harm that it's been done. So the media has to take their share of the blame, too. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank both of you so much. I think the show's been important and informative. I hope you're both come back again so we can talk further about this issue. My guests have been Dr. Mark Salzer. He's an associate professor of psychiatry at Penn, and he runs the Collaborative on Community Integration of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. We're also joined by Carol Mihalik, a board member of the Bucks County chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. She's been active there in many aspects of it, but most specifically helping police get trained on how to assist those in mental illness. Well, we're going to hand you over to my dear friends at Pledge Central and ask you to please show your support for this kind of programming and this station. And thanks so much for listening. Now I'm going to hand you over to my dear friends Susan Palenko and Mike and Scott. Susan and Mike, and it's all yours.
Thank you, Dan. Our number here is 1-888-345-9499. This is the kind of program that really can only live on public radio, can only be heard when you have a little bit of time to discuss important issues. These are issues that are very complex, very complicated, and you can't just glaze over them and come up with some kind of solution. It really takes time to talk about. And time is something we have thanks to your support, because people like you call in at 1-888-345-9499 and make the very model of public broadcasting possible through their support. We have a lot of new listeners, Susan, which is great, and we're hoping that today we will convert you into a new member.
And if you're a new listener, the way in which you can participate more fully in WHYY is to become a member. It's really all about you, and membership is where it's at. So please give a pledge of support to WHYY and to Voices in the Family, and you can do that by giving us a call at 1-888-345-9499. We have a mini goal this hour to hear from 40 members. That could be new members, who are new listeners who would like to become members, renewing members, but it's really about you and about 28 other people who we'd like to hear from. And it's really about getting behind Voices in the Family. As Mike and said, this kind of program you would not hear elsewhere. And what I'm always so fascinated about is the large vocabulary words that are often thrown around our voices. I finally come away understanding what they're talking about. And that takes time. And that's what we get from Voices. And that's what you get from WHYY, 1-888-345-9499.
And mental health issues really are something that cut across all aspects of our lives. It affects the way we work, the way we interact with each other, how we live, what we do. So give us a call if you find this kind of programming important. Our number is 1-888-345-9499. We had a lot of help this morning. We had breakfast provided by the Gold Standard Cafe. We had a wonderful volunteer group in the Child Guidance Resource Center. They are here helping us out right now. We're hoping that you will do the same from a different location by calling us at 1-888-345-9499 or by connecting with us online at whyy.org. You know, Susan, when I first started working with Voices in the Family, we didn't have our